Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
I'm wondering what negotiation did you do that said, I'm going to accept this because when I leave this perch, this will have been made different because I was here.
Yeah, I was very much a part of. In fact, the day I got elected, I was coming back into the hall after doing a press conference, and one of the RNC members comes up to me, a woman I'd known from when I was a state chairman and served on the executive committee, comes up, gives me this great big hug, and she goes, I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited because now Black folks will join the Republican Party. And I looked at her and I smiled and I said, I'm no Pied Piper. And that moment for me was very clarifying because it confirmed, you know, an aspect of this process. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, well, they just elected him chairman. I had to go through six ballots. Mm-hmm. I had to go and stand up against a gentleman, a former state party chairman from South Carolina, who was still a member of a white only country club. I had to go through six ballots. So this wasn't, oh, let's just put the Black man in charge.
I had that man on my show, Michael, if you may
recall. I know you did. I know you did.
And I asked him about his white-only country club membership.
Yes, indeed. And I remember that. I remember that very well. So that's never been lost on me. But the one thing I've learned over the years in whatever I do, I wake up in the morning, I'm a Black man. I go to bed at night, I'm a Black man. I'm still a Black man. I cannot walk away from that. And one of the more difficult aspects of leadership for me has been making sure that that is understood in everything I do. Mm-hmm. So when I coined the phrase hip hop Republicans. Why? Because I wanted to send a message that I wanted to go into a space that the party had never gone to in recent history, but that we have a historical link to my community, right? The Republican Party is the political home for Black folks. That's where we started. That's where we got our voice. That's where we started to make a difference in this country through public leadership. My party walked away from that in the late 30s and into the 50s and 60s.
The New Deal.
And so part of me has always been standing as a sign of contradiction to its current future, current present and potential future, as a reminder of that historic past, of how a Frederick Douglass helped shape the Republican Party, for example. So it is something that is not lost to me. And my goal was to elevate the game inside the party, because I knew from a long time, you know, this whole, we want to do outreach. Oh, really? So let's do outreach. So I'm going to create a department and put $1 million in it, put a Black woman in charge of it, and call it an effort nationally to go out and brand the party with the Black community. You would have thought I told them that I was going to take $2 billion of RNC funding and spend it on legal fees.
Like Michael, what's happening right
quick
now.
Quick follow up. That's why I would wonder, For Black folks who are considering a Trump right now, would you say most of the time was spent trying to keep them from doing more harm, more damage, more wrong? Or were you in a position to then transition the party's thinking, its resourcing, its effort, its energy, its
That's
everything?
That's an incomplete work for me, Andrew. That's an excellent question.
I get it.
I didn't get to finish that. It really kind of goes to what Angela was asking.
I don't want to lay that on your, I'm not laying that on you.
No, you can lay it on me. That's fine.
I totally get it.
That's why I asked the question.
Yep, I get it.
Or try to, because I think it's really important to see whether we're talking about you or we're talking about Jamie Harrison at the DNC. Jamie is catching hell for trying to get them to diversify contractors.
Yeah.
So you like on one level. So what I'm saying is,
I had the same issue.
You're going to have it in any institution in this country, whether it's political, completely apolitical, nonprofit, for-profit, any single government from local, state to federal.
That's right.
It is going to happen. But the question is, on the other side of that, are you happy with your legacy on the, because in parties, you're responsible for electing people to office. When you look at what they stand for, are you happy with that? Do you have any regrets? And I'm not saying you have to answer that now, but the question is for Jamie, for anyone who runs for a state party chair, local party chair, whatever, are you happy with the slate? Does that reflect your values?
Angela, what makes that that question difficult is because you run the full gamut of candidates. In the totality, yes, because in the main, the candidates who served for as long as they served between that period of 2010 and 2014, in large measure, they were good men and women. They were good public servants. And some of them were hardcore charging Tea Partiers for sure, but others were not. And so, you kind of, my job as a chairman is twofold: raise money and win elections. I'm responsible for 50 state parties and 7 territorial parties. And I've got to be all things to all of them at all times. And so, yeah, I mean, there are aspects of there are a lot of frustrations I had around the healthcare debate because I wanted the party to go out and own the Heritage plan that was Obamacare. I wanted them to own the Romney plan that was Obamacare. And they wouldn't. And that was frustrating because my thing is we can't be authentic in asking people to make a decision about their health care if we're not honest about the fact that the plan we're arguing against is our own. Right. So I had those battles internally, which you didn't see publicly because it's not what you do. Jamie Harrison's not going to take that battle with contractors to the street. Yeah, he just isn't, unless he's planning to quit that very afternoon. And so there are a lot of battles that I had that dealt with my Black skin that you didn't hear or see. All you saw was this asshole got elected and has now screwed the country. Well, there was a lot more to that story. And there were a lot more good people who unfortunately got blocked out because of that one ass. And so you're always kind of trying to figure out that balance of putting forward the best candidates. My philosophy was, unless I had like a situation with the Christine O'Donnell where it had just completely gone off the rails. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? She's now the nominee of my party.
She's also not a witch.
And she's not a witch.
A lot of people too young to even remember those.
I know that's true.
He's not to run that ad in this.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I don't want anyone to get this conversation twisted. And I may have sounded defensive, but I'm really not. I mean,
and that's understandable because if you're attacked at that one point and you're not understanding the nuance of the question, it sounds like, oh, this is a typical Democratic talking. Let me walk you through how I'm trying to show that you're going to get blackmailed at whatever institution you're a part of.
Yep.
And I wanted to know, as a Black man, can you stand on that legacy? I don't know. You may not even remember. I'm sure you don't remember this. But when I was a part of NABALSA, the National Black Law Students Association, you came to speak at our convention. 1, 2, we talked about my dad's mentor, Dr. Fletcher, Arthur Fletcher.
Arthur Fletcher was a mentor of mine. Affirmative Action,
a Republican. I wasn't raised to see parties in these boxes. My dad was always on the wrong side of every elected official because he's an activist. Every single, except for Shirley Chisholm, again, who we showed earlier, and Congresswoman Waters. So I understand the nuance of that, but if we can't safely have family conversation about this is where the party's getting wrong, this is where they messed up with me, this is why I see them going down a road of destruction, and here's where it really started, I don't think any of us are serving our folks well.
No,
so
I agree with
that. I wanted to ask it.
You
were honorary today in combat, but normally we don't get that high.
Welcome home, Michael. I appreciate that.
I do appreciate the question. And particularly as we're going into this cycle and the conversation around, where the Black vote is. I'm not advocating this party for the Black community. I think this iteration of the Republican Party is a full-on detriment to Black people and to all Americans, agreed, quite honestly. 2020, agreed. I took the leap, which was a process I'd be happy to come on your podcast and talk about, of getting to the point of, as a former national Republican chairman, endorsing Joe Biden for president and actively acting on his behalf to see his election. Guess where I am in 2024? I'm in the exact same space. As I say, this is not an election about electing Joe Biden because you agree slapdash with every policy that Joe Biden's put out there. Y'all have issues. I have issues. But guess who I'm standing behind in 2024? This is not a question for me. It is not a concern for me as an American citizen. And so my politics has always been in that space. I'm not beholden to the Republican Party, never have been, didn't grow up in the system, which is what they don't appreciate about me, because I don't tap dance the way they like me to tap dance. Never have. Had a problem as a county chairman, had a problem as state chairman, and as a national chairman. So I'm used to the problem. But the one thing I know, when I'm given the job, I have to do the job, win elections and raise money. I won my elections. So no matter what they say about Michael Steele's chairmanship, they can't take away the legacy of winning more House seats, more governor's races in 100 years. And they haven't done ish since then. There is that. Then there's the piece that Angela raises, which is the fallout from all that. So that does raise the question and the concern, how do you, in the process of electing people, not stay focused on or lose sight of who you're electing and what they stand for? And that is a very legitimate question, made ever more present and important today, given the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts and the Matthew Gaetzes that are preeminent in my party. And I fight against that as well. So I will own the Tea Party. It happened on my watch. I had to negotiate a peace, if you will, with them. So we could win races with someone like a Chris Christie or Bob McDonnell in Virginia, New Jersey and Virginia, respectively. But I also know that, the landscape has changed dramatically from that time, which, leads me to ask you guys, where do you see this cycle? How do you see the Democratic Party, which I think, I'll be honest with you, straight up, I don't know how I ever lost an election to a Democrat, to be honest, given the way they run elections and the way they look at the electorate. And in this cycle, even more so. I had a conversation a few months ago in a town hall I was doing, and I made the point that what struck me about what Democrats don't understand about their own guy, they spent the first 18 months talking about a filibuster and fighting Joe Manchin and Sinema over a filibuster, and the rest of the country was asking themselves, who's Phil? Who's Buster? And what did they do to make Democrats so mad at them? That's this election. So now you see a lot of playing catch up by Democrats trying to talk about Joe Biden's legacy or working on the economy, on COVID, on healthcare. How do you see this playing out? I mean, not just among Black voters, but white suburban women, who's your Achilles heel?
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.